The Murray-Darling Basin plan was based on the best scientific knowledge but has been corroded by bad politics and disinformation. That's according to Richard Beasley, author of Dead in the Water, and he was the senior counsel assisting SA's Royal Commission in 2018. He joins me now. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Really well, thank you. Now, you've written what you call a very angry book. What has got you riled up on this issue, Richard?
Well, the first thing that's made me angry is you mentioned that the Basin Plan is based on the best available scientific knowledge. That's actually what the law requires. It's what's made me angry is that that didn't happen.
I see.
Disgracefully, the core of the Basin Plan is to determine how much water needs to go out of consumptive use like irrigated agriculture, because we've over-allocated water for agriculture, and how much will need to go back to the environment on a yearly average to ensure our environment in the basin doesn't continue to be degraded. And that was under the law, that's meant to be decided by science, but it was instead decided by grubby politics.
Interesting. I mean, a lot of people that I've interviewed on this, including scientists and ecologists, say that the plan has been the best thing, the best bet that we've had. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree entirely. The plan's crucial, and the Water Act is a fantastic piece of legislation that was passed in the dying days of the Howard government, and it requires us to do this really important thing, save the environment of the Murray-Darling Basin. So there's nothing wrong with the Act, and we need a plan, and I'd agree it's better than nothing, but it's not being done lawfully. It's being done unlawfully, knowingly so, with maladministration and with negligence, and given that it's costing $13 billion, I think that's a disgrace.
Right. And what do you think has gone wrong? Is climate change denial a big part of that?
Massively. That's one of the things that came out of Brett Walker's Royal Commission, was what he described as the gross negligence of the Murray-Darling Basin Authority of ignoring the advice that was given by the CSIRO about a drying and hotter basin. As a trend, there'll be years where it's wetter, there'll be years where it's dry, but as a trend, it's undoubtedly getting hotter and drier in the basin, which means the environment's going to need more water to survive. We're going to have to make some tough decisions about agriculture versus the environment, and governments are going to have to, instead of ignoring climate change, are going to have to get busy coming up with solutions for people that live in the Murray-Darling Basin, because those people are going to have to get used to a future with less water, because there just won't be the same amount of water. There's very little anyway, but there's going to be less.
With me at the moment is Richard Beasley, author of Dead in the Water. He was senior counsel assisting SA's Royal Commission into the Murray-Darling Basin plan a few years ago. I often hear from politicians, you know, Tony Passon up here, the Liberal member, that it's about, you know, saving farmers' livelihoods, as though it's mutually exclusive from saving, you know, the ecology of the basin.
But it's all intertwined, right?
Yeah,
these politicians talk a whole lot of rubbish. The Basin Plan and the Water Act assume that irrigated agriculture is going to continue. No one in their right mind would suggest that we suddenly end all agriculture in this country. What the Basin Plan is about is simply what I think is a perfectly reasonable approach to take, which is we have over-allocated for nearly 100 years now water to agriculture, and we have to stop doing that, and we have to instead return some water, not all water, but some water to the environment to stop the long-term degradation of the important wetlands throughout the basin, in all the basin states. Not only should we do that because we have an obligation to the future to do that, but because it's part of our legal requirements under international law and international treaties. So there's a whole reason for doing that, but it's not agriculture versus the environment. It's simply not too much for agriculture, not throwing water licences out like confetti in the way that they've been done largely since the Second World War.
When it comes to, you're talking about illegality and particularly with irrigators, do you have
concerns? Don't forget, that's not just my opinion. That was the findings of Walker and his Royal Commission. So
right.
You don't have to just take my word for it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, tell us more about that and what is going on. Has this got to do with water being bought and sold at a premium? Like, tell us more about what's happening.
That's, that, that, look, that's a different problem. I mean, water's been detached from the land. It's now available to be purchased in a market. Naturally, capitalism being what it is, the people with the deepest pockets are able to buy water, and smaller scale farmers get squeezed out of being able to afford water, particularly when water's scarce. If it's rained in a particular season and there's lots of water, naturally there's more supply, so the price drops. But when there's drought conditions, it's the people with the deepest pockets that can pay for water. That is a problem, but what I'm trying to identify in the book is more an overarching illegality with the whole plan, that the core part of the plan about deciding how much on a yearly average needs to go back to the environment. As I said, that was meant to be decided only by science, and instead it was a political fix.
And would you like a watchdog with sharper teeth?
I'd like a watchdog with sharper teeth for the whole of what Canberra does, not just water. So
yep.
Yes, is the short answer.
Great. And we can check out your book, I imagine, at any good bookshop, as they say, or online, Richard?
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. Thank you.